there that brag to you. But I don't need all that. Good. Doesn't mean I don't. The myth of balance. The whole concept of having balance in your life is ridiculous. Look, I'm not trying to balance my life. I'm trying to have a life. I'm trying to blow up my life. I'm trying to create my life. We got t-shirts in our society. Seek life balance. How about this? Seek life. Not somebody else's life, not somebody else's identity, not somebody else's idea, your life, your ideas. I want to blow up. People often think if they become completely obsessed in order to be great and dominate, something must be compromised. But it's not true. Be it time with family, a good gym schedule, hobbies that you don't even love anymore, going to church for 45 minutes, reading books or whatever. Look, being obsessed with this thing will not keep you from doing those things. Obsession isn't about settling or sacrificing things that are important to you. Obsession is about having it all. Health, family, career, money. You don't need to ask, what would I rather have, money or health? The answer is both. I want my cake and I want to eat it too. I want my cake, my pie, my biscuit, my scone, and I don't want to put on any weight. You don't need to choose. You need to have it all. You don't need to choose between this and that, between success and a good life, between happy and rich. That's for average people. That's for the people that quit and are trying to make sense of why they quit, who've lost control of their future. Obsessed people demand it all to get it all, and that's why they do it all. They're not preoccupied with life balance. Take advice from those who have figured out how to do it all, not just those who say they are happy or have figured it out. And don't take advice from just anyone. The people who suggest you live your life by making trade-offs and seeking balance don't know anything about achieving extraordinary lives. The people that would tell you that, no one will ever know their names. They aren't trying to build legacies or change the world. They proudly admit to whoever will listen, I don't need all that. I'm happy with what I have. I just want to be happy. Can't you ever just be satisfied? Dude, you bought it. Don't try to sell it to me. I don't even believe these people know what they're saying or talking about, because to me, they're not balanced. They're half alive. How can you be balanced when you're not even doing what you want every day? Haters and naysayers. Look, if you're going to see your obsessions all the way through, you must be ready to deal with those who are going to be critical, those that are going to be envious, and worse, those who drive doubt deep into your spirit. I like to call them haters and naysayers. Look, you're going to be surrounded by both if you want to be successful. In fact, the more successful you become, the more haters and naysayers you will attract. I assure you that when you make it public that you're going all in on your obsessions, the haters and the naysayers will come out of the woodwork with unsolicited opinions about how wrong, how ridiculous, how arrogant you are. Their doubt, their fear, their jealousy, and advice to quit will come at you from every direction. Hell, you're likely to have a couple show up just because you read this book. You must make sure that you're not one of those very haters and naysayers of yourself. You have to handle any self-doubt you have going on inside you. Get ahead of the self-talk with this exercise, which focuses you on your massive goals. I have huge, crazy ideas. They're so out there that even the obsessed think they're over the top. If they're crazy to me, what might the average person think and say when they hear me talking about 7 billion people are going to know my name? 7.3 billion, 8 billion people tomorrow, 7 billion people. It's impossible. I'm going to go public with a $4 billion real estate fund. And by the way, I don't know anything about it. I'm going to produce a hit television show that's going to be on 6 or 8 years. And I'm going to be the star, the producer, and I'm going to run my brand. I'm running for president. Now it's your turn. Make a list of some of the crazy goals, or better yet, grab the goals you've already started writing down from the exercise in chapter 3 and then just blow them up. When you're reading those goals, did you hear that voice in your mind saying, no way? It will start offering running commentary, okay, like a talking head at Fox or CNN, about how impractical, how ridiculous, and how impossible your dreams are. The voices will say things like, where are you going to find the time to do all this? Okay. What are you going to do all this for? Why are you doing all this? You're too old or too young to do all this. Notice how even you have this internal naysayer critic putting you down, discouraging you and making you miserable and doubt. And you are supposed to be on your side. So if you do this to you, what do you think they're going to do to you? What can you say to you? When I doubt whether I can, for example, build a $4 billion real estate empire, I quickly take out a pencil and write down the number $4 billion. I go analytical. I don't go emotional. I go analytical immediately. I negotiate analytically. I make sense of things analytically. Hey, $4 billion. I think I can't. $4 billion. Then I think about how close I am to this goal. I already got almost 500 million of it. So I need to get 3.5 billion where I'm at right now to where I want to be. I also think about who else has done this. Who has broke the back on the pony already? Okay. How many times has it been done? Who did it? How did they do it? With that, I'm immediately back on track with the possibility of the goal, not the doubt. Rather than the doubt I have about what I might be able to do and want to do, I get out of my emotional and get my head on the paper and focus on how it can be done rather than how it can't be done. Now, if this is happening to you and you hadn't talked to anybody yet, wait till you start sharing with employees, friends, family, or the person that you sleep with. Look, there's plenty of naysayers and haters out there, okay? You don't need to stand in line and be in your own hater, naysayer line. I can't afford to be one of the people that hate and naysay on me. Once you get your own head straight on not being your own obstacle, how do you recognize and eliminate these outside sources of doubt in your life? Well, let's first take the naysayers. The naysayers, by the way, are far more dangerous than the haters. The naysayers. It would be one thing if critics were just evil people, mean, terrible, criminal, dark people who meant nothing to you. But sadly, the naysayers in your life that are most dangerous include the people who love and care about you the most. And while the naysayers, while the intent is not necessarily to cause you harm or stop you, their comments do stop you, at least for a moment. Who might launch a surprise attack? Who might be some of these naysayers? Surprising people, a parent, a sibling, a lover, a spouse, child, a best friend, an employee, an employer, a manager at your office, a coworker, a stranger, a board member, a teacher, an investor in your company. Imagine an investor in the company telling you you can't do something. Maybe even your guru or your life coach that you've now outgrown. Look, people who love you, who want you to play it safe, who want you not to be disappointed can be naysayers. The naysayers all sound the same. Does any of this sound familiar? Be careful. Watch yourself. Be patient. Go slow. Why take the risk? Play it safe. You don't need to do that. We love you, Granty, just the way you are. Why don't you give me a pacifier while you're at it and just reduce me down to being a baby? Kind of need this input. I don't want this input. This input doesn't help me. This is not fuel in my tank. I need fuel. I need jet fuel. The naysayers, you don't need their love. You need their support. I don't need them worried about me. I need them to push me. That's what my brother did. My brother told me the truth. Go to work, dude. The naysayer is trying to make sense of why they are not pushing their own selves. They need you not to make a change. They can't afford for you to explode. You will remind them of what they gave up on. They care about you, but that doesn't mean they have good advice for you. They care about you, but that does not mean they have the right to distract you from your destiny. Yes, their intentions are not bad, but their information is terrible. For instance, my mom was my best friend and one of my biggest fans. She was also one of my biggest naysayers. After all, she was my mother. The mother has to protect the son. Be careful, she would say. Or can't you just be satisfied with what you have done already? Why do you need to do so much? She would plead with me. She believed in me too. And even so, she was still a naysayer. Even in her own life, her first response to almost everything was no. And it had been like that for years. She always wanted to impress my mom. I think every son wants to impress their mom. Even today, my mom's dead today. She died 6 years ago, but sometimes I'll be driving down the road. I have this great victory. I'm like, oh, I want to call mom. Dang, I wish I could call her. She was always the one I wanted to call. Even as a 50-year-old adult with multiple businesses, and I've done all this stuff that people said I couldn't do and proven even to myself. My first inclination was to share those ideas and successes with mom, but mom was a naysayer. And every time, without exception, her response was concern, fear. Why are you taking so many chances? When is enough enough? Here's some other examples she would share with me. I went to my mom early in my career and say, mom, I'm going to quit my job and start my own business. And she said, but you're doing so well, son. Why would you do that right now? Another time, hey, mom, I'm going to start a second company with a partner. She replied, you know, your dad had his company taken away from him when he took on partners. One day I went to her and I announced, I'm starting to invest in real estate, mom. And she said, how are you going to handle tenants calling you at midnight about a plumbing leak when you have so much else going on? See, when I told her I was going to fulfill my lifelong dream of living in California, automatically, she said, I can't even believe you're thinking about that. It's so expensive to live there, and everyone who lives there is crazy. See, my mother never started her own business, never took on a partner, never invested in real estate, and had only once been to California. But she had warnings about all these things that I wanted to do. See, without even realizing what she was doing, my mom automatically responded to all my ideas with caution, the naysayer. She wanted me to play it safe. She was a mom protecting her son, which is ultimately the reason why the people who love you will tend to say no to your ideas. They're concerned about you first, who they know you to be right now, and their instinct is to protect you and themselves. That's why most of the advice you receive will not be supportive. It is aimed at preventing you from doing anything that involves risk or from breaking out. Recently, I told my sister about a real estate venture I was considering, and she immediately reminded me of the one time long, long ago when I ventured into a partnership and it didn't work out. Why would she feel the need to remind me of the one time things didn't work out when I have 100 that did? Do you think it's possible to be in business for 35 years and not have one thing go wrong? But she does not have the long view, the confident view. And she's not in control of her own naysayer. She has the play it safe view. She was being the protector, a sister, not a creator and a risk taker. And it doesn't know how obsessed I am with my obsessions or how happy they make me. She was responding as a family member, not thinking like an entrepreneur. My sister and I, Diane, we have the kind of relationship where I just said, knock it off. I don't need or want your doubt. It's not welcomed here. I want your support, Diane. And by the way, I love you. In general, though, the best way to handle the naysayers is to hit your goals over and over and over until they have no choice but to believe in you. Professional warriors. I was having a medical checkup recently, and as the doctor, they're not family, I never knew this woman before, as the woman started to check my blood pressure, she launched into a diatribe lecture. You know, people like you tend to be under a lot of stress. She's only been with me like 3 minutes. You should really da-da-da-da-da. But I had already quit listening to her at, you know is an indicator, by the way. They all lead with, you know. She's a doctor in a hospital working at 3 o'clock in the morning, okay? She handles sick people. She's in a sick factory. Her advice will be sick. For the sick, for the disabled, for those people that need to take a nap or die. I have heard this so many times from so many people. People always telling me how stressful my life must be. In truth, have no clue whether I'm experiencing stress or not. In fact is, I'm not experiencing stress. You're stressed. I'm not. I had a nurse tell me one day, oh, your blood pressure must be off the chart. I'm like, wrap it up, baby. Let's see what we got. Okay? She's like, oh my God, that can't be right. It was so low. I'm not experiencing stress. I'm loving my life. I love and crave all the activity. I like the random things happening. I like new challenges. See, what these professional worriers are really saying is that they think they would be stressed if they were doing all that I'm doing. They're saying more about themselves than about me. I believe this. I have this as a stable piece of data for me. Most people are talking about themselves, not about you. They are saying more about themselves. Why do you need so much money? They're talking to themselves, not about, they're saying to themselves, how do you speak on stage? They're not talking to me. They're talking about how would I do this on stage? You understand? See, I'll tell you, the doctor was the one who looked very stressed and tired and beat up and hammered to me. I went there because I was having a medical condition and I looked like I was in better shape than she was. And she was delivering the assistance and the bad advice. Unsolicited and untested advice givers. Lots of them. Unsolicited advice givers are people who know about everything, but have most often never done anything. Just think about them in your life. They're everywhere. Regardless of their intentions, the advice they offer inflicts doubt upon the target. Can't you just be happy? When are you going to have enough? That's great, but you know we love you just the way you are. The ultimate. Don't you have enough Twitter followers to get your message out? I've had to listen to the unsolicited advice and useless yet popular little sayings from countless people my entire life. It's the journey, Grant, not the destination. Money won't make you happy, Grant. I'm like, you ain't got any money, man. Don't give advice on it. Okay? Who are these people talking to anyway? Are they trying to convince me or are they trying to convince themselves by the recording they play? Whether the advice comes from family or business experts, you hired to help you, take it with a grain of salt, because if you take it seriously, you will feel the sting of doubt. There's a story about Howard Schultz, the founder of Starbucks. He moves into Japan. The company's 35 years old now. He's made it real, way bigger than anybody ever imagined, including himself. And he's going into Japan. And when he goes to Japan, they hire a consultant to make sure the Japanese culture is considered. The consultant comes in and says, Howard, Mr. Schultz, we recommend by survey that you need to take her off the cup. The Japanese will not like this. Howard, the naysayer, Howard says to the consultant, thank you very much. Go see this person. They're going to give you your final check. What's going on? Your services are not needed any longer. And he went and he put the emblem of Starbucks on the cup. And when they launched in Japan, they noticed that when people walked out, the Japanese, when they walked out of the Starbucks, out of the doors, all of them walked out and they would turn this because they wanted everybody to know they had been to Starbucks. You have to know. It doesn't mean you don't seek information, but at the end of the day, a friend of mine, Doug Doring, told me, he's the founder of ABC Mouse. And I called him. I said, you know, this, that, I just know, Doug, I just know. And he's like, dude, if you can't trust what you know, you don't have anything. You got to know. You got to trust you. When social media arrived on the scene, I knew it was, and first I said, oh my God, what a waste of time. And then I'm like, oh, you're stupid. You're ignorant to what it could be. And then I realized, oh my God, this could be massive. It's going to be monster, not just for Facebook and Twitter and Snapchat and whatever, YouTube, but it's going to be a monster for me. I also knew I was obsessed with getting known to the world. I'm like, this is it. This is the gift. If God gives gifts, they gave me Facebook. And YouTube, and gave it to me for free. You know, the gifts God gives you don't always look like what you might think they look like. I started posting, and then I was told repeatedly, you're posting way too much. Experts would advise in social media conferences, Grant Cardone is what you should not be. Experts reached out to me without requesting them to. Hey, I'd like to give you some advice on your Facebook or your Snapchat or your YouTube or whatever, right? You are posting too much. You are promoting too much. You talk about yourself too much. And I'm like, well, who? Show me where those rules are written that I post too much. Twitter didn't call me and say, hey, too many tweets, man. You got to pull it back. No, this is some person that has nothing to do with my company that calls themselves an expert in a space where there are no experts. Let's face it. It's a brand new space. The rules are being made. The companies don't even know what the rules are. And where is it written that a human being could only post or promote themselves too much? Where do people get this data they give you? I wanted to know who was saying that. I asked my people in my office, who's saying I post too much? How many followers do they have? How much do they post? The guy says, dude, you post too much. I'm like, hey, just delete me. The page is not for you then. There's 7.3 billion people on this planet and growing every day who don't even know my name. Every time someone on my staff said, Grant, we're posting too much, or we're hitting the list too much, or we email too much, who's complaining about it? Who is complaining about it? These people? Good. What about the rest of the people? Why don't you put a list of people together that aren't complaining about it? I thought to myself, wait a minute. CNN throws up garbage 24/7, 365, including Christmas, Thanksgiving, and every holiday. I'm complete garbage. It's not too much. I can't tweet 24/7, 365. When people get sick of them, they move over to Fox. What's Fox doing? They're puking on the public 24/7, 365, including Christmas. They never take a day off. Turn on Netflix. You got stuff that was written years ago. They turn on Netflix, Fox, CNN, whatever it is. Pick it. It's garbage. Where do they get millions of years of mostly garbage content and put it on TV? It's like the aliens came here and said, hey, how can we just turn these people into robots? We get TV. We stream out everything. See, my conclusion was that if you have great content, my knowing this, if you have great content and are giving people great information, you could post it every 15 seconds if you want to. Sometimes we post something new on Twitter every 5 minutes. Yesterday, over 100 posts on Twitter alone. Does that seem excessive? Well, probably does to you. You only say yes because you don't understand the size of the universe of social media. According to Accelecom, in one internet minute, the time it'll take me to share this with you, in the year 2016, there's almost 3 million videos viewed on YouTube, 2.4 million searches on Google, 32,000 Instagram posts, 350,000 tweets, not to mention Snapchat, Instagram, and just keep going on and on. That's not to mention articles, TV shows, and not to mention the naysayers and haters that come and give you free advice at the cooler. Look, if I lose a few followers because I post too much, I assume they were never going to do business with me anyway. They're not my people. They're not my tribe. They're not part of my deal. And oh, by the way, there's 7 billion people. Did I say there's 7.3 billion people growing every day? If a person goes away from me because I push too hard, call too much, or send out too much content, adios, because I'm obsessed and you're not. Then it's likely they're not the type of people I want to do business with or that will do business with me, and not the type of person who understands what it means to be obsessed in the first place. Who would pick up a book with a guy sitting on the engine, straddling the engine? The only people that would pick this book up are crazy people. Congratulations. Welcome to the club. I'll tell you a story about the haters and the naysayers and the objectors. I fly into Austin, Texas to speak at an event. I was paid a bunch of money to fly in there. It seemed like a bunch of money to me to speak for 1 hour. A guy comes to me at the end of the event. He's like, you know what, man? You post so much, I had to block you. And I said to him, love me or hate me, brother, at least now you know me. You know, the most interesting thing about this guy is he blocked me for what I was given to him for free and went to something he had to pay for to see me in person. Okay, you feeling what I'm saying? What's most interesting is this guy who had blocked me was now paying me. People justify their averageness. Understand that naysayers are trying to protect themselves from being reminded that they have relegated themselves to average. They cannot afford for you to do something big because it will challenge the justifications they make for staying small. You are a threat now to all things average. You remind the average that they have settled. Of course they're going to be critical of you. He wants too much. He demands too much. He's too much. They're trying to make sense of where they're at and how they got there. Look, it's a lot of work to write a book. I can't tell you how many times I've told someone I'm writing a book and their response is, you know, it's a lot of work to write a book. They don't even know. They've never, really? You've written a book before? No. Or somebody might say, you know, people don't even read books anymore. Or did you know that most books never get published, Grant? The experts. They're everywhere. This is the voice of the naysayer who needs to make sense of not doing, who needs to defend their right and it is their right to be average. They've never written that book they've always wanted to write. It doesn't matter whether their intention is to help you or hurt you. Understand that. If you listen to them, the result will be the same. They will deter you and add doubt and confusion to your already challenging goals, making a difficulty even more difficult, thousands of times more difficult. Hey, look, you went into this with a little doubt. You're human. You know you want to blow up. You know it's going to be hard. You don't know why you're doing it. I'm just talking about one naysayer. But what if you have many? And what if they turn into more than naysayers? Let's take on the haters. The haters. The naysayers I described above are people who are supposedly on your side, not intentionally trying to stop you. It's not the enemy. Their negativity can often be overcome by simply understanding why they say what they say. But there are those out there who are truly envious, sick with envy, sick and bitter and threatened by anyone who is successful. These people produce nothing themselves. This is what you need to understand about the true hater. They have produced nothing themselves and fell way below their potential. They only try to stop others that do produce. What separates the haters from the naysayers is the intention behind the negativity. The naysayer may be someone close to you who actually loves you and wants the best for you. The hater, on the other hand, they don't want you to succeed. They want you to fail. See, the haters are much easier to identify. That's why the naysayers are more dangerous. The hater, you can see him or her. And understand, they really don't want the best for you. They will lie and cheat. Your job is not to cave in or become distracted by their efforts. The only thing they produce in life is hate. Because they can't create anything, they spend their time trying to stop those that do. Haters are going to hate while the obsessed are committed to create. I've had many haters in my life, and I am convinced I would not be where I am today without the haters. All of them have contributed to my success. That's right. I'm telling you, the haters have fueled me and my success. Here are just a few. The football players who beat me up in high school. Thank you so much. The manager of the McDonald's who fired me when I was 15, God bless you, brother. The counselor when I was leaving the rehab who told me I would never stay clean. And if I ever, ever wanted to make it, I would give up all ideas of becoming a superstar. Thank you, my man. The sales manager early in my sales career who tried to stop me every day on every deal, telling me I couldn't get it done, the financing wouldn't happen, we couldn't find... I love you, man. I love you. The two banks that refused me loans on my first real estate venture. Oh, praise you. Competitors in my speaking career who were threatened by my presence and made up lies about me if I won a customer's business. The PR company in Los Angeles that told me I was overexposed and should take all my videos off of YouTube. The social media gurus, oh, by the way, most of my traffic, my business, my discovery from people that don't know me comes through YouTube. The social media gurus who said I was too promotional and posted too much. You've made me who I am. And the publishers who turned down my first book. Look, haters are always saying more about themselves than they are saying about the person that they direct their hate to. He's so cocky. He's showing off his Gulfstream. Really means, why don't I have a jet? He talks about money all the time. Means, I'm trying to make sense of why I don't have any money. He promotes himself so much. Means, I quit promoting myself long ago, and now I'm trying to stop those that do. See, when they hate on me or they hate on you, they're trying to make sense of why they quit. They can't create, so they try to stop. And that's the good news. These people can't do anything. Nothing comes out of them. If you don't have haters, let me tell you something. You are not obsessed. You have to have haters. Every great company, every great person, every person that's ever done anything on this planet that made a difference had haters. If you don't collect haters, you're doing nothing. If you don't have haters, you are a threat to no one. A guaranteed indication that you're onto something, that you're going to make things happen, is that you're getting haters. When they start writing about you, copying you, stealing from you, man, you might be in Van Gogh land. Look, your job is not to get along with haters. Your job is not to block them. Your job is not to handle them. Your job is to stay obsessed with your obsessions until they're realized and then obsess some more. Your job with every hater is to make sure your face and your work is on every bus, every train, every plane, and on every TV channel. So every time they go clickety-dickety-doc, they get to see your big face and get sick to their stomach and reminded of all they quit on. It's themselves that they hate, not you. But let's use their energy. Haters are actually your best promoters. I don't like people saying nasty things to me. It hurts. Spiteful, untrue things. But because I know that that is part of being successful, I have come to embrace my haters. They are energy. They promote me for free at no expense of my time or energy. Is the naysayer, my sister, I don't think you should buy that real estate. I don't know. Or my mom, be careful. Is she going to promote me? Of course not. Will the hater? That guy bought 4,000 units. I remember in 2009 when the economy collapsed, I get a post on one of the social mediums. Dude, I hope you go upside down now that the economy's falling apart. It was so vicious and mean and ugly. That was fuel for me. I remember that guy's post, okay? He wanted me to go down. Fuel is fuel, okay? And remember, haters are hating. They aren't creating, except more of those they hate on. When people hate on me in public, which most don't, by the way, they do it behind your back. They won't even have an avatar or their face. They do it online. It's not terrorists. They are without courage of any sort. They would not do it to your face. But if it happens in my face in public, they're promoting me and my name and my brand. And I'm like, please, please share the blessings. Please, please write about me. Please tell the world why you disagree with me. Tell the world why I'm awful, because love me or hate me, at least now you know me. Haters will promote you when naysayers won't. Naysayers won't tell the world how crazy your ideas are. The hater will, because they're worried for you and trying to protect you. Haters, on the other hand, will tell the world about you, your ideas, how crazy you are. How many people have said Elon Musk is a whack job? Wants to go to space, wants to build electric cars, wants to go solar. He's crazy. Yeah, he was a millionaire by the time he was 24. Haters will promote you more than even your biggest fans. I think it was Howard Stern that said, you know, the people that love me listen to me 2 hours a day, and the people that hate me listen to me 4 hours a day. When the haters seek to take you down through some form of media, they're promoting your business all the more. In fact, the more successful I am, the more the haters scream about me. And I always tell people, if I could get half the people in the United States of America to hate me, I would have a chance to become president of the United States of America. Turn haters' negativity into fuel for your obsession. Don't try to stomp them out. Haters give you great ideas. Use the negative energy haters provide to fuel something creative. Someone once wrote an awful, awful, nasty blog post that claimed I was completely selfish. Imagine this, because I waited till I was 51 to have children, they said I was selfish. Not only was that the most insane thing I had ever heard, the truth was I waited until I was 51 because my wife didn't get pregnant until then. And I was trying, trust me. My response was not to block this person or to retaliate or debate or defend. Instead, I was inspired to create. The G&E show came out of that. My wife and I on Wednesdays create a show called the G&E show, Grant and Elena show, where me and my wife sit in front of a camera at our network and talk about marriage, kids, and business. See, let your haters give you the gifts. Don't try to block it. It's like a customer giving me an objection. Don't block the objection. Receive the fuel, okay? Naysayers will never do this for you. Haters will promote your shows. They will give you great ideas. Let your haters help you be a creator. Haters tell you that you're on the right track. They're acknowledgement. You just don't like the way it feels. When social media hit the scene in a monster way, there were a number of social media conventions around the world. Everywhere, they were popping up every weekend. Two presenters used my name in Seattle, Washington, as posting habits of which not to do. My response was not to attack them or have a debate. I simply concluded that their hating on me was an indication that I was on the right track in the right neighborhood and did more. I figured man, if that could get them talking about me, why don't we just ramp it up? Okay. So I 10X'd everything. I just started posting 10 times more. Let's get them to scream from the rafters, the name Grant Cardone. It will cost me nothing. Over time, though they didn't promote me, evidence showed they were wrong. My audience online grew by hundreds and hundreds of percent. Okay. Today we're going to get, this year we're on track for some 300 million people meeting me because of social media. Those authorities back in the day who thought they knew everything about social media, the expert psychiatrist, the expert social media guy, the expert politician that's never signed the front of a check. They're telling you what you need to do when you know better. Starve the doubters and stay on track. The real danger haters and naysayers bring is the possibility of you going off track. If you don't push through all the doubts and the confusion and the distractions they will throw at you, you will lose. And other people will lose too. You must be willing to cross the safety line in life and in business by crossing the line. Governors are put on engines to keep things running nice and steady so that the engines don't go too fast and blow up. But the obsessed are willing to redline the engine, and that scares the general public. What's a red line for if not to find it? What's an edge for if not to stand on it? See, the obsessed are not interested in popularity contests or the majority rules approach. The obsessed are monster dreamers who are confused by the fact that so many people think so small. The obsessed are the ones trying to figure out what's wrong with these people, while the average are like, that guy's crazy. They don't understand when it became popular to not dream big. The obsessed would rather be disappointed by not reaching a massive target than never trying to reach it at all. Haters and naysayers quit reaching. They just talk. No one creates an explosive business or the next big thing by staying inside the lines of what people expect of them. The naysayers will warn you. The haters will scream about you. Let them. Let them. Don't try to stop them. Sure, you know that your goals will irritate the average people. It might even challenge industries or destruct the status quo. It may challenge the people who love you and drive others insane. Telling the naysayers you're no longer listening to them is no easy task, but you have to get so comfortable with who you are and what you're doing to tell them, stop it. Stop the naysaying. I don't need your advice. I don't want it. And you have to get used to taking on the hate almost like it's a pleasure. You have to get so comfortable with and sure of your obsession that you don't listen to anyone who tells you it's better to doubt and become confused. Use the naysayers as guides and the haters as fuel. Do not fight them, and certainly never attempt to tame your obsessions because of them. Obsessed people aren't looking for permission or approval. They don't need anyone to tell them that their ideas sound okay. Instead, their inner resolve makes them solidify space, explode ideas, and trespass boundaries. They create new environments. You create new environments because you are willing to invade conventional reality, entering with neither permission nor approval, and exiting having redefined everything. Success is the ultimate revenge against the haters, the critics, and the naysayers. I know this is extremely immature on my part. I know it is, but I love knowing that all the people who have done me wrong, counted me out, see me flying in my plane, read about me in a magazine, open up Twitter and the Facebook and whatever stream is most popular, and see me reposted, liked, retweeted. I love it. I love it to know that my hater, oh, Ralph and Rob, walk through that San Diego airport and they see my books in the window. I'm immature, I agree. I just can't wait until they do a movie about me and I'm on the side of buildings and buses. Chapter 6, Dominate to Win. You have boundless energy and intense white hot drive and dreams so big they wake you up and sweat every night. But if you don't dominate all the areas of your life, you will collapse under the many forms destructive forces take. Dominating your space starts with you and spreads to the people who work with you, from you, and then to your customers, and then to your competitors. Becoming the overwhelming presence, the example, means you must be the leader in all areas. If you can dominate your own thinking, you, your employees' thinking, your competitors' thinking, and the public's thinking, then you own the space. But it starts with you. I first wrote about this concept of domination, not competition, in my book, If You're Not First, You're Last. Most people misunderstood that book. They thought it meant to dominate others. What I meant by domination was to dominate self first. They thought I was talking about overcoming competition. But true domination and true obsession starts with you, not them. It might seem easy, but many people never master this concept. You can't dominate your business or your life. Hell, you can't even create a corporate or family culture unless you dominate your own mindset. You do this by learning to control your thinking, your actions, and your choices. When I was 25, my life started to improve when I made a commitment to my self-improvement, to my domination of my own lifestyle. It's a bad idea to ignore your ambitions. It's a worse idea to deny your energy and your obsessions, but it's even worse to let them take their own course. They could be like wild horses running full speed in every direction, wasting energy and resources with tremendous amounts of effort that produce nothing. Look, don't experiment with every idea you have. Don't experiment with every idea you, your family, or your staff have when those ideas have never been tried, tested, or even proven. Look, I'm not saying I don't experiment. Just experiment while you're working full steam on things that you know work. Do you understand? Why try something not yet tried and done when you can reinforce what's working right now? You can't change the future without making what's working right now work. Why try someone else's playbook when you have one that's already paying off? Confidence is vital, not only to staying on this course, but also to setting the course, reinforcing that course for everyone, and then making sure you win. The best way to gain confidence is to dominate your space, to be in control of your space. I'm going to be talking about this in a later chapter. Be in control of everything. Be a control freak. Dominate yourself. When you neglect to dominate and control yourself, your life, your time, your energy, you will waste years of your life. This is where the military would benefit us all, with its structure, its ethics, its rules, its orders. I'm not talking about today's military. I'm talking about years ago when the general came in, the sergeant came in, and you just did it. Unquestioning task of execution. Do what the leader says no matter what. Get in line. There is big value in that. In civilian life, most people don't understand or operate under culture or mindset where you must show up on time, where you must dress in a certain way, where you have to operate at a peak capacity, where you're pushed and you must follow orders. See, today everybody wants to lead. Nobody wants to follow. But the truth is there is more value in the individual that can follow than one individual that can lead. Because no one is setting a clear course. Your energy gets dispersed and goes everywhere and then nowhere. I have felt most confused in my life when I had more choices than I possibly could handle. I have felt most in charge in my life when I got it down to a few things and demanded it. What I realize is that it is ultimately up to me to set the rules for myself. Develop the capacity to break down and analyze each area of your life so you can dominate those that are most important to you. Turn them into what fuels your obsessions. Dominate your limited thinking. When I started my first sales training business, my first company, I was the only employee in the beginning. I wore every hat in the company from accounting to shipping. I knew everything about everything. I was the only person. My life revolved around finding out what worked, repeating that, consolidating that success, using that energy, and repeating that again. Even though I was obsessed with work and it was financially starting to work for me, I was neurotically and uncontrollably compelled by pain, loss, fear, scarcity, and insecurity. Certain the success would only last for so long, I was driven to work 19-hour days. Not by purpose, but by necessity as an owner and sole employee. I was driven, not obsessed. I was controlled. I was not dominating. I was being driven by fears while obsession was working for me in some areas. This out of control obsession, really. The reality was I had not yet given myself full permission to go real big. Look, you don't want issues beyond your control steering you because you don't. You can't control them. If your problems own you, it's only a matter of time before they lead to tormenting destruction. Until you learn how to get rid of the negative and to focus completely on your potential and your goals, somehow you will always feel you're falling short. But when you define your real obsessions and make them the things you invest all your time and energy in, everything will start to change. You will become obsessed by choice, not by pain. Until you figure out how to get rid of all that limited thinking, which, by the way, I know how to do and happy to help you with, focus on simply reining in beliefs or behaviors that harm you, that set you back or distract you. If you want more information on how to get rid of them, send me an email, gc@grantcardone.com, subject line, get rid of this. If you know you're weak in a certain area, move to dominate the problem so that it is no longer an issue. If alcohol is a problem, get it out of your house. If smoking pot is your vice, even after they legalize it, flush it down the toilet. If strip joints are not the place where you're going to meet your spouse, then just stop it. Knock it off. There is no domination without discipline. Similar to that, be careful about whom you spend your time with. The people in your life are either good influences or bad influences. It's black or white. There is no gray. You should take a piece of paper out. Mark it down the middle. Put the people in your life on the left or the right, okay? On the left side, they're helping you. On the right side, they're not. It's simple. It's not complicated. If you don't know what side they're on, you should not spend time with them. I won't and I don't. Fill your time up with those who are supportive, not just those who are family and friends. Dominate your time. People constantly ask me, how do you get everything done? It's easy. I write down the parts of my life that I want to be great in, and then I become obsessed with making time for those parts of my life. And I don't make excuses. I make time. See, you can make time or you can make excuses, but you can't make both at the same time. Case in point, I'm committed to making time for my family. To pull this off, and by the way, I'm doing my life, okay? I'm not trying to be a great family man here. I'm doing my life. It gives me pleasure to be a good father. It gives me pleasure to be a good husband. It gives me pleasure. I'm jealous. I'm selfish like that. I like playing with my kids. So to pull this off, I have to be smart about how I use time. So what I do is I dominate time. I get my young children up each morning. We go drive to the local coffee shop where the three of us hang out, whether they want to go with me or not, okay? I dominate. Hey, guys, we're going. I go wake them up. 6 o'clock in the morning. My wife gets to sleep in. She loves me for this. So I'm accomplishing multiple things at the same time. I get the kids up. What does that do? That makes sure they go to sleep early at night. Because if you get up at 6 a.m. and you're 6 years old, you can't stay up till 10 or 11 o'clock at night. You understand? That way I get to spend great time with my wife in the evening. After 15 to 30 minutes of quality time with my kids in the morning, they're done with me. When we return home, they eat. Then we all get ready for school or for the office. Kids don't need hours of Grant. Maybe your kids want 4, 5, 6, 7 hours. I doubt it. Most kids are happy with just a little bit of time, a little bit of direct attention. It's quantity. It's quality. But look, you only have 24 hours in the day. How are you using it? Kids don't need hours of your time. And as they get older, they need less and less time. They just need some of your time. By being both committed to spending time with my kids and knowing they feel that I am committed to being with them and creative about how I spend time with them by hanging out with them in the mornings instead of at night when everybody's tired. Or maybe I take them to the gym with me and we work out. See, I make my time fit my needs. I don't manage time. I make time. If you can wrap your head around the idea of creating time rather than managing it, you're going to get on the dominating side of this clock. By the way, it's not just what kids need. Their parents need time together too. I've seen so many marriages exist in a vacuum where the husband and wife have kids and then they quit being a married couple. pushing all their attention onto the new kid or kids and abandoning their relationship. My marriage does not exist in a vacuum. I'm running a business. I'm running a marriage. I'm running a family. And the rest of my life is a challenge, just as it is for you. Look, my wife and I do as much as we can together at the business during the day. We look for opportunities to work together and grow our brand together. We take what each of us is good at and then each invest energy in that. I don't ask her to make sales calls. She'd be terrible at it. She would hang up before the customer does. I let her do what she's good at, which includes producing projects at Grant Cardone TV, the G&E show, and many, many other things. Look, my wife is an unbelievable supporter of me and believer and cheerleader of me. She magically sits in the background, truth be known, and kind of magically makes things happen. One way we optimize time together is we spend time together while building the business together. For example, we typically don't go out to dinner, just the two of us. Instead, in fact, I can't remember the last time my wife and I went to our favorite restaurant, just me and her. We normally bring someone with us. It's a way for us to be at dinner and to extend our brand, possibly do some business and make new friends. I don't see a point in spending money on a nice dinner for just two people. They get to spend the rest of their lives together. Look, I'd rather spend four times the amount of money on a dinner that would produce more opportunities for us as a couple, as a brand, and as a business. And honestly, one date night once or twice a week won't build a strong marriage. We have a strong marriage, my wife and I, because we're on the same page 100%. Maybe that's an exaggeration. 96% of the time, maybe 95, okay? Including how we view time. And let me just say this about time. My kids get up and go to sleep when we want them to, not when they want to. They're the children. We're the parents. Now, as I mentioned earlier in my book, blank space in my calendar leads to boredom, which has got me into more trouble than anything in my past. To avoid that, I fill my time up with appointments and activities. Today at 58, I literally run from one thing to the next. Most time, I don't even know what I'm supposed to do that day until I get there. When I fly into a city to do one meeting, we stack it up with multiple meetings. Also, stop wasting time on tasks that don't matter and can't pay off and won't fuel your obsessions. For example, someone else should now mow my lawn and wash my car. If these chores don't get you and I closer to where you want to go, should Elon Musk wash his own Tesla? I just don't get it. Even if he likes washing his own car, I'm sure his time could be spent better discovering a battery that would let that car run forever. Pay someone else to do the tasks that aren't part of your obsessions. Look, your time and your focus are precious. So treat them that way. Quit making excuses. Quit complaining and dominate your time. There's time to do it all when you make time and quit making excuses and quit trying to manage it. Dominate money. Money is a major area that you absolutely have to dominate. For most people, money is a constant concern. Whether they're discussing it or not, they're thinking about it. Every time you go to the doctor, you fear the deductible. Every time you go to the grocery store, what's it going to cost? Every time, every day, every week, every month, people are beat up and hammered with what do things cost? How much money do we have? How far will it go? Will we stretch this money out? And each time what's happening is you're being reminded you are not in control. Every time you get a check, you're reminded of the way you think about money. The government's taking money from you and you don't even know how much. You're out of control. But the lives of the people who are barely making it financially cannot be fixed by just giving them more money. If you're not in control, you're not in control. Most of us are brought up poor or middle class, and then we're left to live the rest of our lives with the foundations and beliefs of the poor and the middle class out of control. I don't know what's happening. I don't know how money's made. I don't know where money goes. I don't know what they do with the money. Hell, I can't even get it when I want it. We emerge full of doubt, confused about our finances, worried about it every day because we grew up with parents that were overwhelmed by the very same fears. Clueless teachers, irresponsible government, and overwhelmed parents. Still, even if we are dazed and confused, apathetic, and even resentful of money, each of us can work to overcome the money mentality we inherited. Bill Gates says, if you were born poor, it's not your fault. If you stay poor, shame on you. Look, your job is to first get your own head right about money. Remember, the domination effect starts with you. You are the first domino to drop. Dominate your thinking. Once you have that under control and you're dominating your personal finances, you can work to remove all the financial doubt from the heads of your family, your friends, your business partner, employees, investors, and clients. If you think your product is too much money, what do you think your client's going to think? If you won't purchase your own product, what do you think your client's going to hang up on? Answering these questions is an exercise that will reveal how money confident you are and whether or not you are dominating your money mental. Number one, what is your money mantra? Do you even have one? If you don't have one, you don't have one. But I bet you have one. I'll bet you have one that you don't even know what it is. What is your money mantra? Number two, what do you think about money? You like it? You don't like it? No big deal. Don't need it. It's nasty. It's dirty. It's stanky. How do you feel about money? How do you think about it? How much is a lot of money to you? Third question, how much would be a lot of money to you? How much is a lot of money? Oh my God, watch. Oh man, I don't know. Write a number down. Stop what you're doing right now and write down. How much is a lot of money? $10 million. Okay, well, good. Then why did you say last night that $55 was a lot of money for a steak? See, that's what's really ingrained in you. If $55 is a lot of money for a steak, $10 million is impossible. Okay, how much is too much money? What amount of money would be too much money for you to deal with? How much is too little money? Have you ever even made this decision? How much is too much money? Write down, how much is too little money? What are the negative thoughts you have or negative ideas or negative beliefs you have about money? Write those down. Do you spend most of your time trying to save money? Write those down. How much time in a day do you spend trying to save money? Coupons, going to Target or Walmart rather than where you wanted to go. You go to Publix rather than Whole Foods. You went out of your way to save some money on gas. You go to the movie at 3 o'clock in the afternoon at the matinee movie rather than 6 o'clock. I know people that take off from work and don't get paid to save $2 on a movie ticket. Insane. How much time do you spend connecting with new money? In the last 24 hours, how much time did you spend connecting with new money? What's new money? People, new connections, new people, shaking people's hands, getting known. How do you act when you see the price of something in a store or in a restaurant? Oh my God, it's so much money. I can't believe that. See, look, there's no right answers to this test, okay? Rather, my aim here is to give you a sense of awareness of how you think about money, to make you aware of how aware you are about the things, the limitations or the abundances and the affluence you either have or don't have. The key here is to be honest with yourself. If you have a problem with anything in life, the first thing to do is to admit it. If you are constantly haunted by money or limitations, admit it. Only then can you switch from scarcity thinking to abundance thinking. Look, don't forget, what you are obsessed with will become a reality. You understand? Good or bad? You're obsessed with scarcity, you'll get it scarcity. This is not the law of attraction. Whatever you are obsessed with will become your reality. You can't see enough, you won't see enough. Look, if you're obsessed with money problems, you're always going to have money problems. If you focus on understanding what money means to you positively, you'll figure out how to get more. It's not about attraction. It's about being right. You are going to be right. You are going to die being right. Money doesn't make me happy. Then it won't. You understand? It's not about attraction. It's not about some magic in the universe. It's about you confirming yourself every day in the marketplace. It's why the hater and the naysayer wants you not to grow and explode. They have to make themselves right. See, early in my life, money, my money mantra were phrases like, well, they were phrases, frankly, ideas that I adopted from other people. Money doesn't grow on trees. A penny saved is a penny earned. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Getting rich is a greedy thing to do. Wealthy people are unhappy, and on and on. Diversify your investments. Send the money to Wall Street. The stock market's a good investment, and so is a house. All these ideas never researched, never looked at, never considered, never inspected. They all pointed to why I didn't have financial success. See, I'd go to dinner and complain about the price of steak and lobster at $57, and I'd go to the movies and complain about the price of a $19 3D ticket. 3D, imagine. Leaves flying in the air, bullets coming right past me. I complained because I had to pay $19.